Hey everybody, Mark Sadowski here with the Lens Wipe. This week is going to be a special week, mainly because it's 4th of July week here in the States, and I was kind of bouncing between playing an interview with Kevin Mullins this week or just airing our regular show. And for this show, I decided to do both. So in just a few seconds, you are going to hear the interview I did with Kevin Mullins. He is a great wedding photographer in the UK that uses the Fuji system. And I mean, there you go. That's why I interviewed him. But he's been a pretty big inspiration as far as photography goes for me. So go ahead and check that out. And in about 35 minutes after that, you'll have the regular episode of The Lens Wipe. And please be kind to me. I interviewed Kevin at 6 a.m. on Sunday after I did a wedding and got home at 2 a.m. So I'm a little bit lack of sleep in this one, but I thought I did okay, you know, considering. But it was a great interview. Kevin is a great guy, and that's all I'll say. On with the show. Hello, everybody. Joining me this week is a very special guest to the Lens Wipe. We are joined here with Kevin Mullins. He is a great wedding photographer in the UK and one of my big influences for the Fuji system. And anybody who has listened to the show in the past few weeks knows I've been absolutely obsessing with this camera system. And then this guy has just been fuel to the fire for me. Kevin, thanks for joining us this week.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So I got to say, the big question that's been on my mind as far as the Fuji X gear with wedding photography is, what's the deal with the UK people in hats?
Yeah. I don't know. It's some kind of weird, long-standing tradition, but they are annoying, especially the kind of brides' mums' hats and things like that, because they cost a fortune. They save up for them and they keep them on their head all the way through the wedding, so you can never see their faces or their eyes, and it casts shadows on them. But there you go. It's one of the peculiarities of Britain, I guess.
No problem. But you do a pretty good job capturing their faces, nonetheless. But seriously, what is? I'm just going to start off by kind of giving an overview of what got me addicted to the Fuji X cameras. I'll just briefly toot my own horn, give the instruments to you so you could do a masterful piece of like nice jazz rendition of it. But basically, a long time ago, before the X system even came into play, I've always been intrigued by the look of a Leica camera. And I've never been able to afford a Leica camera, but I've always loved that that old time, like that old simplicity, that solid build to a camera. And then when the X100 came out, it was always a novelty to me. Like, this is something that I wanted to own, just because it simply looked beautiful. It simply had that old nostalgic charm to it. And then it never dawned on me that any of these cameras could perform up to snuff for a wedding or any professional endeavor. And then the moment I used one is the moment that it just changed my outlook on photography. It just reawakened it in some degree. What led you to the Fuji X gear? What was that spark that got you interested in the system?
It's actually quite a similar story. My wedding work is all kind of reportage, photojournalism. So
yeah,
I've always been interested in something that basically freed up my hands and led me to work lighter and move around more freer on the day. And I was also drawn to Leicas, but again, couldn't afford one. I went to over here they have a thing called the Leica Academy, which is a day where you spend a few hours with a professional Leica shooter, and they give you I think it was an M9 I had, and off we went and shot with it for the day.
And they let you touch it.
They did, yeah. I think they had us on radar though, so we could. And it was great. You know, it was a lovely camera. The images are beautiful, etc. But the, you know, that whole authentic rangefinder thing for me just wasn't, I couldn't really, I'm sure there are people out there who can and do. In fact, I know people who do it really well. But I can't see myself shooting reactively enough with a proper rangefinder camera and using the manual focus mechanisms that are in a Leica. So when the X100 came along, that piqued my interest too. And I got one pretty much as soon as they hit the shelves over here. And if I remember rightly, it's a few years back now, but I think it arrived one morning and I happened to have a wedding that afternoon. So I took it with me and kind of gave it a run for its money, got some safe shots in the bag and used it throughout the day. And really loved it, you know, absolutely adored it. And, you know, we all know that the original X100 had, you know, when it first came out, had some issues with autofocus in and low light, etc. But in terms of the potential and what it gave me on the wedding day, in terms of kind of moving around and being completely inconspicuous and just getting the shots that I just would not be able to get if I was raising a great big 5D Mark III with a, you know, 20 to 27 mil lens, 24 mil lens on it or something like that in front of my face. So, yeah, it was great. And then over the last 3 or 4 years or however long they've been out, the X-Pro1 came along, which is, you know, amazing bit of kit. And now the X100S, which is, you know, an even better bit of kit and just seems to be getting better and better. And, you know, I'm really excited by the Fuji cameras and actually what they offer in the future. Hopefully in the next couple of years, I think we'll be seeing some major impact with these cameras. And, you know, I honestly think more and more photographers will be going down the route of using these mirrorless systems, whether it's Fuji or whether it's other manufacturers. But, you know, I think it's kind of a bit of a turning point, really, especially for my style of photography.
Yeah. Going back to the Canon stuff, what was the gear that you used prior to using the Fuji?
5Ds, 5D Mark IIs and 5D Mark IIIs. So I also have a 1DX, but I use that for sports shooting. My kind of hobby stuff is sports, so I shoot with the 1DX, which I saved up for a very long time for. part exchanged a whole load of other gear to get it as well. But yeah, so yeah, generally kind of my wedding gear in terms of Canon is 5D3 and 24 mil lens, 35 mil lens, and 85 mil lens.
Yeah. Now, are you, just to kind of reiterate, are you only using the Fuji system on, weddings now? Do you incorporate any of the Canons into the events?
I still take the Canon with me. I've done a few weddings where it's been totally, especially since the X100S has come along. But there's still certain times when the Canons, you know, the high functioning DSLRs are still a little bit better. And certainly in really low light dance situations. I don't use flash, so I don't have a flash on my Fujis. I don't have flash on my Canons or anything. So when the light is really, really poor, then, you know, I don't really have much choice but to go to something that can really shoot in elevated ISOs, you know, without too much of a problem. And yeah, so it still comes along with me generally. But certainly, I mean, we've had an appalling summer here in terms of weather, but certainly in the good light weather weddings, the X systems are the go-to tools for the day.
Very cool. How did you, what adjustments did you have to make for using the X Pro or the X100S as the kind of the primary camera during a wedding? Because like you mentioned before, there are the auto focusing issues that we had in the past, but also it's just a different method of shooting entirely. Just the autofocus system is completely, well, not completely different, but it is something to get an adjustment to. So how was that adjustment to you during a wedding? Like, for example, during key moments when the bride is coming down the aisle or like during a cake cutting scene?
Well, one of the things that kind of revolutionized the way that I use the cameras for me was implementing a kind of, it's almost like a back button focusing kind of technique, really, where I when I use my Canons, I always use the back button focusing technique. So I have my the exposure and focus is set via the button on the back of the camera, and pressing the shutter release button just exposes the image. It doesn't re-meter or it doesn't refocus. So I can shoot a lot faster that way. And that was something that was kind of missing on the X-Pro1 and the X100, and it didn't really have a built-in mechanism for that. But there's kind of a workaround for it. So basically what I do is I set the AF lock mode to switch, and then you can use the back button, the back button AF button to do the autofocus, and then the exposure button on the top, the actual click to take the photograph. It works exactly the same way as the back button focusing then on the Canon system. So you can rapid fire across the top without it having to refocus and re-meter that scene. So you lock the focus on the back, it meters the scene, and then you can just rapid fire across the top. So when you're doing that fast moving stuff, where you need to shoot several images in quick succession, then it decouples the focusing effectively from the exposure button on the top of the camera. And that works with the X100S, the X-Pro1, and the XE12. And it kind of revolutionized the way that I shot.
Man, I'm really missing out on that thing, because everybody raves about that focusing button. That's something I still don't do yet. I still can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah, you should try it. It takes time to get used to it. I suppose for me, because I've always used my cameras that way anyway, and this kind of comes back to the sports stuff as well, because the sports shooters will shoot this way. It's a very clean way of being able to fire fast burst images. And it really does kind of free you up a little bit. You click that AEL button on the back of the camera. That locks the focus, that locks the exposure, does all the metering, etc. And then that front button at the top, the actual fire button, if you like, you can just crack that three or four times, and it will just expose the image based on the settings that it's metered when you press that button on the back. So it works a lot quicker, because it's not autofocusing every time you press that release button.
Right.
It autofocuses once at the beginning, and then the autofocus goes away. You don't need to worry about that. This only works, by the way, if you set this system up. You have to set the camera, ironically, into manual focusing mode. Although you don't technically need to actually physically manual focus, because the AE button on the back, when you press it, that overrides that and doesn't autofocus.
Gotcha.
I've got stuff on my website and everything. If you need to direct people to that, that's cool. Then I kind of talk about that on my website a lot. It's a really good way of using the cameras in a rapid way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty familiar with your links. I've been, using that as a means to convince myself to go all the way with this.
It does take time getting used to shooting that way, I think. I know a lot of people have kind of tried it and gone back to the original way, but it's perseverance is the word with that, and I think it's worth it.
I'll test it out on an engagement shoot that I have today. I'm sure they won't mind. For me personally, I find that the images that the Fuji produces, and I really try to always avoid the term your camera takes X amount, you know, X kind of photos, because ultimately it's the photographer that kind of that determines that. But I find that the quality of images that the whether it's the X100 or the X Pro, the quality of the images that it produces is has a different kind of look and feel than what an SLR would produce. I don't know, you know, whatever is happening in the back of the sensor, you know, whatever magic that controls that. But how do you feel visually? Do you notice a difference in your photography between using the X system and using the, a difference between the X system and the DSLRs?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the image quality, you know, I don't want to knock kind of DSLRs, because my Canons they do produce wonderful images also, but the Fuji system, you know, traditionally Fuji have been, you know, well known for their color back in the film days and their film processing, etc. The color out of Fuji stock was always, you know, what they were renowned for, and I think that they've managed to take that into these X-Trans sensors, and they produce remarkably clean images all the way up to kind of, you know, 6400 ISO. Remarkably clean, remarkably sharp, remarkably colorful, and very, very rare to have, unless exposure's been set incorrectly, but it's very rare for it to blow out highlights or lose too much detail in the shadows. Whereas with the DSLRs, I think for me at least, it was easy. It's too easy for me, perhaps as a photographer, to blow out highlights, etc. When I'm shooting wide open, I like to shoot wide open on my prime lenses.
Yeah.
And with the Fuji stuff, it's with a kind of, especially with the 35mm lens on that X-Pro1, it's almost, you know, it just doesn't blow out highlights. It's incredible. It's just amazing. Now, there's obviously technicalities involved in that. It's not a full-frame sensor, and a full-frame sensor will obviously see more light, and you've got more of a chance of that happening, blowing out highlights, etc. But it's the images. You can always tell a image side-by-side if it's come out of one of the Fuji cameras, because it has a certain density to the color, it has a certain density to the black and white and the sharpness, and you know, it's just marvelous image quality, really.
Yeah, I totally agree. What advice would you have for anyone looking to kind of do that primary switch from a DSLR to a Fuji camera or a mirrorless system?
Yeah, I think it really depends a lot on your style, wedding photography, especially wedding photographer style. If you shoot a lot of kind of PJ and documentary photography, then I think you would absolutely adore shooting with these cameras, and it will really release you into the wild, if you like, throughout the wedding. You're effectively a guest, you know, you just mingle with a camera that's just like all the other guests have got, a lot smaller than in some cases, and just go for it. Don't be afraid to get the safe shots with the bigger cameras, DSLRs, etc., and then put those in the bag and just wander around for half an hour or an hour. Get the reportage shots using the new equipment, the X Pro 1 and the X100S especially, and then you'll find that over time you'll become more confident with it and move along, and it will be, you know, a real powerful tool to have in your camera bag. The ability to just pick up and go without having to worry about, especially with the X100S, actually, without worrying about lens changes, etc., and you can just get amazing images out of them. And certainly on a par with some of the DSLR stuff, and easily good enough to be printing at large format and printing in albums, and you know, the clients will not know the difference at all in terms of the technology that you're using. So be empowered and go forward.
Mental note: buy X100S first.
the X100S is actually an incredible camera. Really, really, really. I think probably has more impact on me than the X-Pro1 did when that came out, because the AF system on the X100S is just amazing, absolutely amazing. Using the back button focusing with that, it's just, you know, it's just allowing us to do so much more as time goes by. And I think Fuji are releasing just released a couple of firmware updates for the X-Pro1, which is great, because they're, you know, they continually tweak and make these things better. I have no idea what the X-Pro2, or even if they call it that, what that will bring. But if they can take on board the magnitude of the changes in the X100S into the X-Pro2 or whatever it will be, then I think that's going to be a super camera.
Oh my God, I can only dream. What do you – all right, this is kind of an interesting story. The first time I used I've only used the X100, actually. I haven't gone to the S yet. It's just a series of rentals that I've been doing just to kind of test out which ones I'd like to buy first. Yeah. But I find it funny that a lot of the guests in weddings are moving towards professional gear. In some cases, better than the gear that the professional is actually using.
Yeah.
And we, the professionals, are kind of moving a little bit into their world by trying to go smaller and more inconspicuous. I just thought that was an interesting anecdote. But the other thing is that I think the big thing to kind of define you as a professional visually for guests, like before, you know, you'd come in lugging your big gear and they're like, oh my God, look at that. Nowadays, that doesn't really happen, but because again, they're using similar gear. But the first time I used the X100S, for the first time in a long time, that turned a lot of people's heads because in their minds, it's a big juxtaposition. And for those who recognize what the old cameras looked like, it's kind of a refreshing look. That's just how I'm envisioning it. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that the X100 is actually garnering looks from guests, something that I haven't received in a long time. Have you had any similar?
Yeah. It's interesting, really, because there's two aspects of that. A lot of photographers say to me, oh, well, you know, it doesn't look professional enough, and clients expect you to be using DSLRs, et cetera, and it's not good enough to be seen with a point and shoot, et cetera. And, you know, my answer to that is, well, A, it's not a point and shoot, and B, really, it's what the client receives is the most important thing rather than what you look like on the day. But yeah, at weddings, I mean, yesterday, I was at a wedding yesterday and a guy came up to me. I was using the X-Pro1 and, he said, you know, is that a Leica? Is that an M system? You know, and I just kind of said, oh, no, it's a Fuji. And, you know, people notice these things, especially the people who are, into photography, the guests. But I've certainly not had any kind of negative reaction in terms of, you should be using a bigger camera or anything like that. And in fact, it's quite funny because, I don't know what it's like in America, but over here, pretty much every single wedding has a guest or a member of the family that turns up with a D800 or a 5D Mark III with a 300mm lens on it. And, you know, they spend all day waving this thing around, missing the wedding, of course, but waving this camera around.
Yeah.
And, and then when you're stood next to them with a camera that's kind of 5 inches by 3 inches and weighs about as much as their wallet, then, you know, it can look very, very odd. But, you know, it empowers you to get better images than using all that equipment, really, in that respect. But yeah, I mean, occasional eyebrows get raised, but nothing at all to worry about. And it's often a point of conversation, which is good. You're good at any wedding to talk to the guests and mingle like that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Here in the States, at least for me here in Massachusetts, you have maybe between 2 and 5 people with the big cameras, at least 20 people with the mid-range DSLRs, and then 20,000 smartphone photography that just pops up in the middle of a wedding and then like lights the place up like fireflies.
Yeah. No, it's exactly the same here. And and nowadays, people have got a picture recently of this arm extending into the aisle with an iPad. And, you know, she's desperately trying to hold this iPad still to take a photo, which isn't an easy thing to do, you know, and she's reaching out into the aisle because the vicar over here, often they say no photography. And so she's trying to kind of do this quietly, but you know, she dropped her iPad and it was all a bit of a calamity. But yeah, I mean, iPads and iPhones and everything else, yeah, everything you can imagine. I actually find it quite interesting, and often we'll make a point of, you know, including that in the photography as part of the story, really.
Yeah. I find that funny, the iPads. That's especially when they're doing video. The one big, yeah. I also do a show on iPhone photography. And so whenever I see people using the iPhone, especially the video, and they're holding it vertically, it always irks me. I'm like, you're supposed to hold it horizontal.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they'll have to just turn their heads to watch it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. What else do I have here? Speaking of like future of Fuji cameras, have you seen the new XM1 that they released?
I haven't got my hands on one, but yeah, I've seen the specs and everything, and it looks pretty cool. I was saying to somebody the other day that I really like the way that Fuji are kind of they're giving everybody an opportunity, if you like, depending on what your budget is. So, this is really there for the people who have a kind of lower budget but want to have an interchangeable lens system and perhaps can't quite stretch to the extra one. And I think it's great that they're doing that. But no, I haven't. I'm hoping to get one pretty soon. And I think that, it could well be the perfect backup camera, if you like, or second camera at a wedding. Or third camera even. That's, these things you can, X Pro 1, X100S and XM1 or something would be great. I think a good system.
Absolutely. I mean, what did you think? Do you actually own an XC1? I mean, we're going to talk shop here a little bit because I absolutely want to pick your brain. I found that the XC1 was a bit lacking. It's a nice camera, but I don't know if it's because I used their zoom lens for that one, but it was just too slow for my liking.
Yeah, well, I don't have an XE1 now. I had I had one for a while where I was kind of reviewing it and things like that for some magazines over here. But I kind of had the same opinion, and I think that's probably because as an X Pro 1 owner, I use the optical viewfinder a lot, and that's the thing that was kind of lacking. And so I didn't really have the I didn't really kind of feel like picking it up and running with it too much because the extra one was always there as an option. But I think if you want an interchangeable system that's a little bit less expensive than the extra one, still as powerful perhaps. I mean, the official kind of word from Fuji is that the image quality is exactly the same and the functionality inside is exactly the same, I believe. So, really it should operate the same. But I think because of the fact that I couldn't use the optical viewfinder, it did slow me down also. And I don't know whether that's the same reason for you.
It's weird because I do find the optical viewfinder much, much faster, but I have a hard time adjusting to that crop, well, not that crop, but that adjustment that it makes.
The frame shift, yeah.
The frame shift, that's the word I'm looking for. That's been hard to do. And every time I try to compensate for that, I actually make the photo worse. So I'm still jumping back and forth between the optical and the digital viewfinder in the X Pro 1.
Yeah, it's difficult on the X Pro 1 because it obviously the frame shift is different depending on the lens you've got on the camera.
Yeah.
So you might put the 35mm on and kind of get used to the way that it's going to bounce about a bit, and then jump to the 60mm and then it's completely different. It's quite dramatic on the 60mm lens. Whereas if you're shooting with say the X100 or the 100S, obviously it still does the shift, but it's pretty much the same position each time, so you can get your head around using it. It's definitely a faster way to shoot using the optical viewfinder, and I think definitely on the X100, I'm not so much sure thinking about it on the X100S, but I think the mechanics inside the camera were slowed down a little bit using the EVF because of all the electronical stuff going on the screen, the viewfinder, and
yeah,
blades and everything. So I think that slowed things down slightly, but I find it a much faster way to work using the optical viewfinder. But that said, on kind of critical images or images that I need to get the pin focus on, then I will switch over to the EVF2, make my little focus point as small as possible to, if I'm doing any kind of detail shots that I want to get critical focus on words or something on say a nameplate or something like that,
right?
Then I'll use it there. It's good that the X Pro 1 gives you both options, and the XE1 obviously doesn't. And I think that's where, for me, it wasn't the perfect camera. But I think a lot of people are using it and seem to be doing quite well with it. So it's all good.
For the first time, I actually saw a guest using it last night.
Yeah.
In that wedding.
The
XE1.
XE1, yeah.
And surprisingly, he was, I forget what kind it was, but he was actually using an old school Polaroid camera, which every shot cost him $40. Yeah. Like, that's dedication.
Yeah, that is dedication. I bet you got some good stuff there.
Oh, man. I wish I actually stopped. I was able to stop to actually look at some of the stuff he got, but I had to keep moving. I don't have that luxury.
No, me too. It's a busy day at a wedding.
Yeah. Do you have any final words to give people advice, and particularly a Polish dude in Massachusetts, for anybody using the Fuji system?
I think for me, really, I think the best bit of advice is really to just use it. If you've done the right thing by renting, and rent it, figure it if you like it, figure it if you can afford to move forward with it, etc., and take it to a whole load of weddings, enjoy using it. For me, that word enjoy is the key thing, because I really, really enjoy using these cameras, whereas the DSLRs is much more of a task.
Yeah.
Much more of a chore, whereas I look forward to pulling out these cameras from my camera bag. And for kind of family photography and just my personal everyday life stuff, I just wouldn't even think about using a DSLR anymore. It just doesn't even come into my mind. It's the X100S or the X Pro One, and bang, there you go. That's what I take on holiday with me to the beach, to if I'm doing some kid stuff at home or whatever. But from a professional point of view, I think it is important to, because it's a paradigm shift in terms of the way you shoot. So I think it is important to take it along and get used to it before making any kind of huge financial commitment, especially for the X Pro One stuff. And, you'll find, or I certainly found, and I think you're probably doing the same thing, that you enjoy using it, and it creatively, it frees you up. Physically, it frees you up, and it kind of gives you a little bit more of a buzz, I think.
Yeah, dear God, that has lit a fire. The interesting thing is that it's made me slower in my photography, but it's slow in a good way, where I noticed that previously with the DSLR, I've always been shooting way too many photos, and whether I'm using the X100 or the X Pro, it's actually slowed me down where it's just one shot perfect, and that's all I need. And that's been extremely refreshing. And yes, it's absolutely fun. I've had a blast photographing my kids, my evil cat, and it's just been great. I mean, I wouldn't think of using anything else for family photography either. Here's my big dilemma. So I do love the X100, but more than likely I'll get the X100S. Love the X Pro. I'd love to start with the X100S, but I absolutely love the form factor of the Pro. That slight increase in size just fits my hands much, much more perfectly. So that's my dilemma right now, which one to buy.
Yeah, I mean, the X100S, for all its great images that it produces, it does feel slightly smaller in the hand, and the buttons are a little bit more quirky to use. And, I've got ginormous fat thumbs and things like that, and it is, you do end up kind of feeling around a little bit and making sure you're on the right button. And that's one of the benefits, I suppose, of DSLRs. They're big, and they can afford to put in the great big rubbery grips and things like that. It's a tough one. You'd be amazed how many people ask me, should I get an X Pro One or an X100S? And really, at the end of the day, I tend to just say, well, it's up to budget, because I think they both produce amazing images. And if you want an interchangeable lens camera and you can afford it, then the X Pro One. If you can't afford it, or you're happy to just go for the fixed lens stuff, then the X100S. And, I often shoot the X100S with the wide-angle converter on it as well, just to give it that little extra depth or extra width, which is great also. And, you do have a little bit of flexibility with the lenses there.
Yeah. I haven't even thought to use the wide-angle converter yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually.
It's not bad for nature photography too. I recently had a trip with the hosts of the Lenswipe and Tiny Shutter shows that we do. We went up into the White Mountains in New Hampshire, and that's my wife. And I was going to use the X Pro for the shot. I was going to rent that, but then I'm like, yeah, I'll go X100, and it did surprisingly well for the slow shutter stuff.
Yeah.
My only problem was that I didn't have a proper filter to use. I was kind of using my 77 millimeter polarizing neutral density combo stuff and just kind of holding it in place.
Yeah. Well, of course, I mean, the X100 and the 100S does have that built-in filter, but it's, you know, it's an electronic filter, so it's not quite the same.
Wait a minute, hang on, it has a built-in filter?
Yeah, you can switch on a an ND filter inside. I don't have my cameras here, so I can't tell you the menu setting now, but it's, it has a built-in electronic neutral density filter, so you can if you're shooting bright outside, then you can dim things down a bit.
Son of a bitch. That serves me right for not reading the instruction manual.
Yeah, check it out. But the X-Pro 1 doesn't have that, obviously, because it's interchangeable lenses, etc., because it's done on the it's part of the lens mechanism rather than anything else.
Gotcha.
So take a look at that.
I definitely will. All right, so to kind of wind things down, why don't you tell the world where they could find you on the internet? How can they get in contact with you?
Well, my wedding photography website is kevinmullinsphotography.co.uk. I also have a website that's fairly new, but I'm kind of building it, which is dedicated to the Fuji stuff that I'm working with, and that is called My Eyes, and you can find that at www.my-eyes.co.uk. I'm on Twitter, which is Kevin_Mullins, and that's about it. You can find me in all those places.
Very cool, and such a pleasure having you on the show, and I mean, I'd love to have you back on another time with the rest of the crew. And talk shop, make fun of stuff, and tease some Nikon people sometime.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Mark. Really enjoyed it.
No problem. Take care, Kevin.
Cheers.
The Lenswipe Photography Podcast. It's where Canon and Nikon shooters can get together and fight. And now your host, Mark Sadowski.
Hey, we made it to the podcast, everybody. Hooray.
Yay.
Hey, we made it to the podcast.
We made it to the podcast.
God damn it, we made it to the podcast. Oh, that's a meme that I did on our Instagram feed, so nobody will get that because nobody listens to it. I am Mark Sadowski. I'm happy to say that our Lenscursion trip went very cool, very awesome, and only one casualty, and that was me because I fell in the river.
Yeah, so, no one got eaten by a bear or anything.
No, I'm surprised. We did get eaten by bugs, though. So
true.
So again, I'm Mark Sadowski. Joining me this week, we have Maud Byrne. How's it going, Maud?
I'm good.
We have Matt Hoffman. How's it going, Matt?
I am wonderful.
And we have Jeff Simpson. He is the Bread Geek. How's it going, Jeff?
Excellent.
So the trip that we went on, it was, if we didn't advertise it much. We kind of just made a kind of half-assed attempt at getting people to come because it was something that we just kind of on the fly planned. It was like, what, month or two in advance? They said, hey, let's just go up there. And only about five of us went. It was just exactly the host of the shows of Tiny Shutter and Lenswipe. We had Siska and Bread Geek that came with us. We had a tremendous amount of fun. It was just the coolest trip that I've been on. mainly because it's the only trip that we've done for the shows. So, so I don't. Granted, I don't have a lot to compare to, but man, that was a great time. And what'd you guys think?
Awesome.
Everyone all at once. That's okay. Oh man, those pancakes were awesome. We started at Flapjack's, where we had breakfast, and then from there we just kind of went off and went to places on the fly, which was really cool because we got some really we got a great suggestion. So let's kind of break it down like this. Before we get into our impressions, here's what we covered. We went from Lincoln, New Hampshire, all the way across. Well, not all the way across, but went to a place called Sabine Falls, which is a really nice looking 3-tier waterfall. I think it's about 3-tier. One of them is big and 2 little waterfalls. And from there, we went to someplace called the Basin, which is just literally a waterfall flowing into a basin, but it looks really cool. But leading up to that basin is a lot of series of flumes and waterfalls, which is really cool. And then what's that?
And Kinsman Falls.
And then from there, we hiked up to the Kinsman Waterfall, and leading up to that one, it's about a mile hike up a mountain. Not a strenuous hike, but it's just a lot of tiers of cascades that are just going down, and so every tier is just like another golden photographic moment. And so it took us like a good part of an hour to get to the actual waterfall we wanted to photograph. And then when we were finished with that, I think we're either going to call it a day or just find someplace real quick. But then the waitress that we encountered that served us at the restaurant that we ate at, she suggested a place called Glacial Waterfall or Glacial Falls. And it's this, Matt, how would you describe it?
Off the map kind of thing.
It's literally off the map.
I think she said it was a tourist trap in like the 1930s, and it's pretty much abandoned now.
Yes. And it's literally in the middle of nowhere. Matt took down the directions and
private property.
Yeah.
Well, the land is on private property. The water itself isn't private property.
Right.
I was a little confused by the sign though. First of all, you drive a couple of miles out on a dirt road to get there. And then as you start walking down the path, it's not far off the road. But, you know, about halfway out, maybe, you know, 20, 30 yards into the woods, you get to this little sign that says, you know, private property, no trespassing. But then it continued on at the bottom to say something about, and I don't remember the exact wording, but something about, you know, proceed at your own risk. So they were kind of saying, stay out, but if you're going to be in, just be careful.
And so it's a good thing we stayed off the land and followed the river itself. Wink.
I think the signs are more to keep the yahoos out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
It was a very kind of misleading location because, you know, that waterfall is not marked on a map and there's no signs to let you know that you're there or that there's any kind of waterfall nearby.
And the banjo music playing in the background kind of freaked us out.
Well, you more than me.
Joe's used to it down there.
That's Matt.
And then, you know, like you said, when we got there, Mark, you know, the creek that was by the road was, you know, kind of small. It didn't look like a place where we'd find, you know, a huge waterfall.
Yeah. It was totally misleading. I mean, it was just like a trickle of a creek that just got wider and wider.
I think that was my favorite spot that we went.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, it was the best waterfall of the day, I think.
How tall do you think that waterfall was? I would say it's like 30, 40 feet up.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, I'd say that too.
That's a good estimate.
So, overall impressions of the trip. Let's do this. Maud, why don't you start? Your favorite moments of the trip, your favorite gear that you used. Just talk about your favorites.
You know, I brought my film camera. I was all excited to go out. Like, yeah, I haven't taken pictures with my film camera in forever. I really love that camera. I can't wait to go take some pictures of it. Never came out of the bag. I I left it in the bag the whole time. I was like, you know what? I don't want to wait weeks to see how my pictures came out. I did all digital. And then I also carried around my tripod with me everywhere we went. Took literally one picture on the tripod. I just can't get into, like, I need a new tripod. Basically, it comes down to I need a new tripod. So those are the worst parts of it. The best parts of it were, as far as I'm concerned, I just love walking up a stream. So the hiking, like, not even on a path, like when we were at the basin walking up towards Kinsman Falls, just kind of, you know, jumping from rock to rock, walking up the stream and finding places to take pictures. Kinsman Falls was great. That was a great spot to shoot. And the Glacial Falls was just very cool.
Nice. How did your
been to before?
How are you at keeping the camera steady? Because I have a great picture of you just using your entire body to keep the camera steady.
Yeah, well, the reason I kept doing that is because, well, I'm just not as patient as you guys. You guys are constantly like opening up these tripods, taking pictures, moving it over this way, moving, adjusting this, just, and I'm just not that patient.
Like, standing in the middle of the river.
you guys are, well, you guys did a lot of work with your tripods, and I commend you for it. I just don't have the patience to constantly be setting it up, maneuvering it around. And mine, unfortunately, is an old one. All it does is tilt up or down, turn left or right, which makes it hard because a lot of the ones you want to get, or a lot of the ones I find, was I'd have to do tons of adjustments on the legs to get it to the point where it was level the way I wanted.
Oh, just for the listeners, if you want to see any of these photos, follow our threads. You can find it on Instagram. Just follow the hashtag LensWipe. Or go to our Google Plus community page, which you can find a link to on lenswipe.net, and you'll be able to see a lot of the photos that we've taken. We've been sharing them as we edit them, and I did a write up of the trip itself on.
Yeah, it was a good write up.
Yeah, it's on. I revamped casualphotography.net. And you could go there, check out like some initial galleries. I had you guys share photos. And Maude, I don't think I put any of your photos up there yet. And I haven't put up any of Siska's photos yet.
Mine will be, I'll be done with them this weekend.
Yeah, no rush. It gives me an excuse to go do a second article. So it's all good. But you could go up there to see some of the photos and check them out. But Matt. Well, let's go to you. Favorite moments.
Favorite moments.
Or just favorites, whether it's gear or scenery or what.
Pushing Mark into the river.
I think my favorite moments were breakfast and lunch. Those were pretty tremendous.
That was a great place for – I mean, obviously a great place for breakfast. We've been bragging about that stuff for weeks now, but – where did we eat? It was the Woodstock Station, right?
Yeah, I just call it the Woodstock Brewery.
It was a great place for food. That was some good pizza. Well, I had the pizza.
It's more of a side, but they were good. They're definitely good food.
Yeah, it's basically your better end of bar food. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Now, I think as far as you know, photography wise, I'm probably happiest with the photos that I shot at Sabaday Falls. You know, I'm really glad that when Jeff showed up, he suggested that we cruise back out that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been there several times, but I kind of forgot what a neat place that is. And then just being with a group of people that is also passionate about photography, it just really, you know, got me pretty psyched up, and I just kind of fed off that energy, and I got a lot of shots there that I really like a lot.
I think I was actually hesitant about going to Sabaday Falls only because that place tends to be a tourist trap, but because we were there so early, I think that helped us greatly. That was
nobody else there.
And
that worked out perfectly.
I'm glad we went too, because the lighting there was perfect as well.
Yeah, definitely. So let me just ask you guys a question real quick. And actually, Maude, this does not – well, you know what? Never mind. I'm not going to ask it because it actually doesn't apply to half the people on this podcast.
Oh, come on. You got to ask it now.
Well, I was going to ask
– just by mentioning my name, everybody now knows what the question is.
I was going to ask what pictures do you like better, the ones you shot with your iPhone or the ones you shot, you know, with a different camera?
I was going to ask that anyway, so.
That question only applies to you, really, because everything I did with my iPhone was video related.
Oh.
I prefer all my iPhone shots.
You only brought your iPhone. Well, all right, actually, before we go, you answer your question. Which ones did you like better? Because you brought your Sony camera and you brought your iPhone. So which did you like better?
I'm also concerned about which photos you like better, because that can just be down to, you know, which one you happen to be using at the time. But of the two, you know, using the DSLR or your Sony there versus your iPhone, which one, and this may be something you can't necessarily answer, but which one did you have more fun using?
No, that's a good question. I had fun using both. But I noticed that there were some spots that we went where I was leaning more towards one or the other.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've had that Sony for a year now, and I absolutely love it. I have a blast every time I go out and shoot with it. But at the same time, you know, I had a revelation of sorts, which it's probably not a new concept to some people, but I just thought, you know, about how I can use different apps and photograph the same scene just with different apps and then blend those pictures together.
Yeah.
You know, using another app to do that. And so that's primarily what I did. I would shoot, you know, one shot of the scene with the slow shutter cam app so that I could get that simulated long exposure effect with the silky water. And then I'd shoot the scene again with a HDR app so that I could get, you know, detail and all the highlights and shadows. And I had a lot of fun going back later, you know, and over the past week here, you know, editing those photos and putting those composites together. That so that was a lot of fun also. I liked it all, to be honest with you, Mod.
Yeah.
Now, a question for just out of curiosity. What you're using an app, you said, to do the combination to put the two different pictures together?
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of apps out there that you could do that sort of thing. It's any app that you could work in layers. So, you know, there's Photoshop for, you know, your iPhone and iPad. You could easily do that sort of thing. I happen to like an app called FilterStorm. It's been around for a super long time, and I've been using it for a long time, and I'm just comfortable in that environment. So that's what I've been using.
Cool.
Just curious.
And how about you, Brett?
Yeah, I'll have to agree with Matt, just being with all the people, you know, all you guys, you know, that are enjoying the same thing. You know, it's a great inspiration to, you know, be with a bunch of people that really love to do the same thing. And, you know, you see one person shooting something and then the other person shooting something and just kind of get you all fired up, you know. And yeah, it's just a great thing. The falls are beautiful. I mean, I love to be outdoors anyway. I mean, that's why I live in this area anyway. There's my backyard that you guys came up to, which is awesome. So yeah, I love being outside, you know, shooting, you know, taking pictures as well. So
what gear did you use? Just tell the audience.
I shot strictly with my iPhone. I used a couple apps. I used PureShot for the images, for capturing the images themselves. I used Slow Shutter for the waterfall pictures. And actually, when I kind of did what Matt did in a different app, I used Snapseed to enhance the colors. Like, I shot Slow Shutter and then used the Snapseed in the adjustments, the details, which is adjust the structure and the sharpness, which really brings out the details and the colors as well. So instead of like blending two photos together, I kind of did it a different way. And I think I was pretty happy with the way those came out as well.
Nice.
and tripod for, you know, definitely the slow shutter shots. You need that tripod for steadiness.
Very cool. And I bounced around between the Fuji X100 that I rented and the Canon 50D with the 24-105 lens. And in retrospect, I really should have rented the X-Pro1 because that would have been a better camera to handle. I really missed that size factor, and it was an awesome camera. I miss it. And also, I should have brought my 5D instead of my 50D because what I really needed with that one is the full frame and not the cropped lens. The 1.6 really made a difference as far as not being able to capture like the full frame of the photo that I wanted to take. But still, I got some great shots. And with my iPhone, I either took macro photography with the ProScope micro mobile
Case. Was awesome.
That thing was that beautiful. And then I just did video recording you guys. And I'm going to do a YouTube video at some point just to kind of show what we were doing and all the goofy things we were up to. So we'll see. So that's my experience. And I guess my favorite thing out of it was just the discovery of a new waterfall.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
I mean, just there's nothing else like it that I saw. I mean, the problem with one of the great things about New Hampshire, it's also kind of a problem, is that they make it extremely easy to get to a lot of the beautiful sites, which is great because everybody should get the chance to see it. But at the same time, it's like it's almost as though there's nothing new under the sun. In fact, when we were coming down Sabade or if we were coming down Kinsman Falls, I think this was one of the things that I asked you guys about is, do you think there's something out there in the White Mountains that looks incredibly awesome that no one has seen yet? And
I remember you asking that.
Yeah, and sure enough, when we went to the restaurant afterwards, we got the answer. Yes, there is.
Taste of that, yeah.
And that was pretty incredible. I was nervous at first because we were literally in uncharted area and my cell phone had no reception. but that's no surprise, AT&T.
Oh.
but oh my God, that was like it was just finding gold as far as I'm concerned. And
Matt and I, when we went in there first, we walked in and we're like, oh, maybe, well, it's getting the creek's getting a little bigger. And then we heard the falls and we're like, there's something big over here.
Yeah.
And there it was.
And it was, I got to say, the other thing was that it was a miserable hike. Granted, it was not a long hike, but
not at all.
Holy crap. At that point, because it had rained between Kinsman Waterfalls and our arrival to Glacial Falls, it was
just... And we had to walk through that field of tall grass.
No, we walked along the river. How dare you remember that incorrectly?
Near a field of tall grass.
Yeah, we walked near that field of tall grass, which was infested with bugs. I mean, these things would just swarm you. I mean, you had to keep moving so that you wouldn't get eaten. And,
but they kind of disappeared when we got to the falls itself.
When we got to the falls itself, yeah, it tapered off. We still had bugs swarming us, but they just swarmed. They didn't attack, which was all right.
That's where I got my favorite pictures were from the Glacial Falls.
Well, I'm sure I mean, obviously.
Well, I'm glad I spent some time laying in the mosquito-infested field for some of those macro shots I took.
Oh, I don't know how you did it.
Yeah, you got a great one with that little orange flower where you look at like half in frame.
Yeah, it looks like a sunrise or something. That looks awesome. Cool. Yeah.
When we got back to our cars, which were parked on the side of the road.
Right beside the river.
Well, I mean, right along the road is what I meant. The cars were just covered in these little tiny green flies. I mean, they were just swarming all over. I'm like, oh. I mean, we had to get in fast before they tried to get in. But, man, it was worth it still. I'd love to see that place in the fall. Because the one of my favorite shot out of the whole lot is, oh, geez, I wish I could find it. I mean, I to describe it is just to say it's a waterfall on the left side of the frame, and on the right side of the frame is the forest, which is nice bright green, and the water just kind of flows down through into the green. And that was my favorite glacial shot. And the one thing I keep thinking of is, what would that look like in the fall? Because it would go from bright green to just a whole myriad of colors from that point. So I'd love to check that place out in the fall.
I'd plan on letting us just see it when the water was higher, because the water seemed to be a little bit low when we were there.
I don't know about that, because we did have a lot of rain leading up to that day.
We did, but if you looked at the way the water course was there at Glacial Falls, it seemed like there was plenty of places where lots more water typically was going through.
Oh, definitely.
Or maybe places just where it used to go through. But it looked to me like it was places where, you know, the water could easily, that the stream could easily be much higher. And there are other little spots where, and the waitress herself had told us about this one spot where the water kind of goes down through a hole in the rock, comes out. And you could see that there, but there was just a teeny bit of water going through at the time.
Yeah.
So I bet that on times when the water's higher, it would go back there and you'd get some, it would look almost completely different just with more water there, with the water coming over in different locations.
Well, that location is a geologist's dream come true.
Yeah, because definitely.
There's a lot of, you could tell there's a lot of history in that area. I took geology in my first year of college. And I just tried to remember all that stuff, and it just didn't come to me. I sounded like an idiot on my own video. But, yeah, I mean, they were good times. So here's what I have in mind. Let's plan another official trip for next year.
Definitely.
Like, because one of the most frequent things I saw in our Instagram feed or our Google Plus feed is that a lot of people wish they could have gone. And we just kind of sprung up the trip at the last minute considering that a lot of our fans are all across the country, dare I say the world. So let's plan another trip in June. I don't know when in June. We can make this official in September or something. But hold on, cough button. I think we should plan another trip that we can all do. And if people want to come awesome. To the New Hampshire area, rent a car, and let's have at it.
Are you coughing?
I'll be there.
He's coughing yet. Well, you know what we'll have to do, though? If we do it in the Hampshire area again, which I don't mind, there's plenty of things up there to go take pictures of. But we should try to do, like, repeat one location and then pick one or two other different locations to do.
Yeah.
And I would say specifically repeat at least one, but try not to do more than one, and try to go find a couple of new spots so we don't end up with tons of same pictures. And I would like to put forth a vote right now if Glacial Falls should be the repeat.
Oh, for sure.
Well, let's say
we can wait till we get a little closer to really make any final plans. But
right. Well, let's do this. If it's going to be Glacial Falls, I think we should, instead of using the river as the path, we should see if we could get permission to use the actual path and make things official.
That would be a good idea.
Wink.
Now we're going to have to figure out who exactly to contact.
Well, there's a house right there.
Well, I don't know if the house is part of the ownership.
That'll be my
guess. We'll find out. I tell you what, I'm heading up, I think, at the end of next month. I'll drive out there and just walk up to the house and knock on
them. Do you even remember how to get there?
Yeah, I could probably not figure it out. Uh-huh. No, actually,
if they don't own it, I'm sure they know who does.
I'm sure they've got to. I mean, because they probably have people coming up asking them exactly that. But yeah, no, actually, I'm pretty sure I could find my way back there. Yeah, I could probably do it.
I think, Matt, you have the official directions, don't you?
I remember the name of the last street.
Well, I don't think I saved them, but I remember how to get there.
Very cool.
I'm going to write a guidebook.
That would be awesome. Nice.
Waterfall guidebook.
Well, we actually, that would be a really cool idea, is if we can, if we're going to do it again, if we could try to find another similar, like, I'm sure there's other interesting places like that, waterfalls, or if not necessarily big waterfalls, other similar types of locations that are not really on the map. That would be a really cool thing to do. If we're going to try to plan it for a year out, to spend that year trying to find at least one other neat place that's not on the map that not all tourists know to go look for.
Well, I think one of the important things is to remember is that the reason why we were able to, I mean, Glacial Falls, as great as it is only two tiers that we were able to photograph, essentially. I don't know if there was anything more. I don't know if you guys walked further along the river part. But, I mean, from what I could tell, it was just two tiers. And the reason why the Kinsman Falls worked so well is because we were able to take our time and go tier to tier to photograph waterfalls. Because every level was a whole new scenery.
And very true.
That glacial, there's more flumes and stuff down river. I walked way down on the trail down there, and there seemed to be more flumes and stuff, not really giant waterfalls, but cool, you know, pools and flumes and stuff down
there.
Yeah.
So let's, I mean, we don't have to think about locations yet. All we need to do, let's by September have a date to announce, and then we can do it again. And maybe, you know, this time we could stay on the North Conway side of things, because we have, on the North Conway side, we have Glen Ellis Falls is a nice looking falls. There's a few others. You have Diana's Bath, which is pretty cool.
That's a big tourist trap.
It is a tourist trap, but I mean, if we could play it off like we did with Sabade Falls and go there really, really early. If we stay in the North Conway area, start there. I mean, granted, there's no flapjacks. I'll deal. But if we start in that area and get there at like 7 a.m., maybe, I know that's a little early, 7 or 8 a.m., we can beat a lot of the tourists. And as we work up the tiers, you know, by the time tourists get there, they're going to start crowding the bottom part, and we'll already be working our way up.
Right.
One thing to mention is we lucked out with the weather when we were up there. We had, you know, forecasts for a few days before. We had forecasts for just bright sun, no clouds, lots of harsh light. But when we the day of, it ended up being – we had a little bit of times where the sun did come out and shine. But
oh, man, did it shine.
Yes. When it came out, yes, it shined. But we had a good amount of the time where it was just overcast enough to be able to do a lot of good shots without having to worry so much about, like, super bright sunlight.
Yeah. Right. So cool. Yeah, I mean, overall, it was a great trip, and this is something that it was just a blast.
Then the rain came down.
Yes, and then the rain came down.
When I went back over the kank on the way home, there were still cyclists in the downpour rain coming over the kank.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
That's awesome. So very cool. That was our trip. We've been leading up to it. We did it. We're sharing photos. I will share video of this within the few weeks. I'll make an announcement on one of our or all of our social areas that you can check out. But it was a great time. It was just great. That's all.
Well, I've got something to say here. If you know anybody listening is too far away to travel to join us for one of these Lenscursions, which I love the name, by the way. if you're too far away, like, you know, Joe was this year, unfortunately, he couldn't come, too far away, all that issues. You know, try to organize something in your local area and send us the picture. Show us what you guys did. We'd love to see that.
Definitely.
Yeah, or buy me a plane ticket to your location. I'll come.
Even better.
A good alternative. No reason you can't do both.
That would be awesome. We definitely have to go down to Joe's neck of the woods because he's in North Carolina, and that place has great woods.
Yeah, it does. Some great rivers down there, too.
Oh, my God, yeah.
when I hiked the Appalachian Trail, came up through there. I fell in love with that area.
Nice. Oh, you hiked the trail?
Yes.
Damn. You're going to have to come on the show.
1994.
You'll have to talk about that one time.
A long time ago. But yeah, I fell in love with that area. It's beautiful down there.
Nice. One thing I wanted to make an announcement before we, because we need to start wrapping things up, is I will be doing an interview with Kevin Mullins. He's the gentleman that has moved exclusively to Fuji cameras for wedding photography. And I was fortunate enough to get him on the show, pick his brain, and maybe worship him a few times. But his work is incredible. I mean, if you have a chance, go to kevinmullinsphotography.co.uk and check out some of his work. I am going to do the interview on Sunday, and I'll probably attach it to not this upcoming podcast or as you're listening to this one. It'll probably be the next one that I'll attach it to. So that should be really cool. And Fuji announced a new camera. But it's not that impressive.
Speaking of wedding photography, Mark, I'm going to be shooting on Thursday. My friend's wedding was strictly with my iPhone.
He's getting married on a Thursday?
Yeah, July 4th.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Kind of falls on a weird day, but he just called me again today to confirm it. You're going to be shooting, right? You're going to do the reception and all that? Yes. Yes, I will.
You have a Mophie juice pack?
I do.
I would definitely get that charged up.
And oh, definitely.
If you have a Mac laptop, I would bring that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I have actually a juice pack. I'll probably charge it three times, probably. It's a good one.
Because your battery is going to get sucked dry.
It's not bad just shooting. It's the editing that kills it.
No, I mean, when I shot the wedding in Connecticut with my iPhone, it just – but then again, we were using Instamatic.
Right, yeah. I'm just shooting straight with PureShot, just straight shots. So, and mine lasted almost all day. I think the only time I charged it was at the end of the day when we got in Matt's car.
All right, you're going to have to share some photos from that trip.
Oh, definitely.
That's going to be awesome.
I definitely will.
Cool. So, excellent. So, let's wind things down. If anybody wants to contact the show, you can always write to us at lenswhitepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on any of our social networks, go to lenswipe.net and you'll be able to find links from there to our Twitter feeds, our Google Plus feeds, and our, did I mention Facebook? Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, the whole shebang. If you want to share your photos, you can do so in any one of those groups, but also on Instagram. Just add the hashtag lenswipe to your photo comments and your photos will be instantly saved. And I don't know what number we're up to right now, but we have a good amount of photos being shared by a lot of different people and it's been pretty cool. Maud, tell the world where they can find you on the web.
Well, about that.
All right.
You can find me at Instagram. Unfortunately, though, my iPod and Instagram no longer jive together. And I am unable to do anything in Instagram until I buy something new. So for a while, all you can see is old pictures. I can't even log in anymore.
You know you can log in through your...
I can't upload pictures. So it pisses me off. I won't log in until I can upload pictures. You still can't do it via the internet, right? I haven't tried it in a little while. I suppose I should try to find out.
Still don't have a website, huh?
You going back there, are you, huh?
Going back there? You said you'd have something by now.
I said I have till the end of the year. I have till half a year to go.
I thought I'd get a jump on it. I think my odds are pretty good.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about that.
Yeah. Matt, tell the world where they can find you.
You can check me out on Instagram and Twitter at mhoffmanphoto.
Very cool. How about you, Brad?
Can find me on Instagram at BreadGeek, and you can also find me on Facebook at Jeffrey Simpson iPhonography, and also jeffreysimpsoniphonography.com on the web.
Very cool. And you guys could find me, Mark Sadowski. I have my brand new website all flashy and ready to go. It's not a brand new website, but I just got it redone, and now it has a pulse, believe it or not. You can find me at casualphotography.net, and from there you can read my articles or check out my social networking groups. There's links to them all. So casualphotography.net, and be kind and rewind. So there we go. That's a show. And man, that was such a great trip.
Yeah, it was.
Those were some great pancakes, guys.
I didn't have the pancakes.
Oh, yeah, I did missing the out. They were good. They made me go. Had to slip one in there. So anyway, that's all for this week. Tune in next week. We'll have a lot more fun stuff and possibly me bubbling up stuff at the end. Like this. You know, because I can't end the show. Boo. Anyway, that's all. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, head over to iTunes and leave us a review and a 5-star rating. See you next week. We'll be right back.